Hi, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show is a movie that has been on my most awaited movies of the year list for 2 years running because of multiple delays and pushbacks, but it's finally here, even though I didn't get to see it in the theater because it didn't open here. Damn you, A24, I love you so much, but why did you have to do me this way? It's not even right. And if you haven't figured it out by now, the movie that we are talking about is Under the Silver Lake, which is David Robert Mitchell's follow-up to It Follows, starring Andrew Garfield. It's a mystery, a very noir-themed mystery that brings to mind movies like The Big Lebowski and Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice, and these kind of weird stoner mixture of noir mystery detective type movies where things unfold and unravel and there's clues and there's just a lot to look at, a lot to dig deep into, and a lot of fun to be had if you're down to go on the journey with the lead character. But joining us for the episode is first-timer Bea Garner. You actually did hear her on our Avengers Super episode, but this is her first time doing a full-length episode here with us. Really glad to have her on the show. And it's a great conversation about a great movie that this episode could have been like a solid 3 hours. There's so much to talk about with this movie. But we get into as much as we can with it, and there are a lot of puzzle pieces to talk about. So before we get into the conversation, I do want to remind you to please make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. And also, you can rate and review us on iTunes. You can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod, and you can join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, a movie discussion group, where the conversation about this movie and all the other movies we talk about continues. So, without any further ado, why don't we jump into this conversation about today's movie, Under the Silver Lake. All right, so we have got someone new here on the show today. Joining us is Bea Garner. Bea, how are you doing? And thank you for being here.
Hey, yeah, I'm really well, thank you. I'm doing great. It's really exciting to be on. So thank you so much for letting me join you.
Oh, absolutely. You've been, someone who I've interacted with a whole bunch on the whole film Twitter world. And so I'm just, really happy to finally get you on the show. And, I've read a lot of your work and it'll be great, especially for this episode, because, your breakdown of Under the Silver Lake was very, a very interesting article. And I mean, there's so much. It's such a movie that you can go just so deep into, and yes. I think your piece really did a great job of starting that journey anyway.
Yeah, I don't even feel like I scratched half of it, like any of the surface. It's just like, it's a great film to sort of to discuss with someone. I'd be itching to discuss it. So great. Where do you even begin?
I know. Well, before we do begin, why don't you give people a little background about you, since it's your first time on the show, and about your, writing, your podcasting and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay. So I'm Bea. I currently write for a few different sites. My main focus is Filmotomy, which I host a podcast for. So we mostly deal with sort of a whole range of films, but we focus on female filmmakers, documentaries, independent film, world cinema. We're just doing a big massive thing about Cannes Film Festival at the moment, which is great. Mm-hmm. And I also write for Jump Cut Online, Ready Steady Cut, and a few other places. If you just need me, I'm there. So like a sort of superhero, swinging in and helping out whenever I can. So
absolutely.
Sorry, I've been watching Avengers, so I may.
Yeah, you just got back from it, so I'm sure it's on the minds a little bit.
Yeah, I may be like and obviously Andrew Garfield was Spider-Man, so.
There you go. Absolutely. I think I don't know exactly how talking about Under the Silver Lake. I don't know what parts we're going to actually be able to dig deep into and all that as we're going through puzzle pieces and all that. But I'm sure we're going to talk about quite a bit of, you know, what makes this movie as, you know, crazy. And, you know, I don't know if deep is the right word in this case, but it is deep. But yeah, why don't we jump into some puzzle pieces? What do you got for your first puzzle piece?
Okay, so this is probably going to be maybe the most obvious one, but I'm going with Rear Window, the Hitchcock classic, which is about a man played by a James Stewart who is spying on his neighbors after breaking his leg and being sort of confined to being in a wheelchair, and he happens to witness a murder, or does he? So I think Under the Silver Lake, there's obviously the main character is spying on his neighbors. That's pretty much our introduction to him. And he stumbles onto a possible murder.
we're still not quite sure.
something goes down anyway. But I think there is a lot of Hitchcock references in this film.
Sure. And I'm glad you're bringing that up immediately. And I knew you'd be bringing some good, you know, good reference to classics like that, because obviously for people who listen to the show, I'm not as good as I should be when bringing up classic, you know, films. And I actually have seen Rear Window a long time ago, though. I do think it's funny, though, using that as an inspiration, because I think it's definitely a perfect example. But it's funny that the character that Andrew Garfield is playing, you know, he's not stuck in his house. I mean, he it's just what he does. He's just sitting around looking out his, looking at people through his binoculars and, just being kind of creepy, really.
Yeah. It's really odd. Like, we don't even know what his job is in the film.
Yeah.
It's just got, you just think you've got like so much to do, but you just rather want to spy on your neighbors. And he does do it in a really creepy way.
Yeah, it's an interesting character because, you know, and we'll get into it more with some of the other puzzle pieces, but I mean, he's not really a character that you, you know, you want to identify with, at least.
Yeah.
Not very much. So.
Yeah, he doesn't make it very easy for you to get on board with his motives and just him in general. He's a bit, I certainly wouldn't want to hang out with him. That's for sure.
Sure, exactly. Well, I'm going to go with another pretty obvious one, although it's a character that maybe you'd want to hang out with a little bit more, and that is the Big Lebowski. There's a lot of comparisons to the Big Lebowski and you know, that whole kind of stoner noir feel out there in a lot of the you know, press about this movie. And I think it really holds up. I mean, this is, you know, this whole just like weird, constantly unfolding mystery with a character who's kind of, you know, not really any form of a necessarily good detective, but he's doing his best to, you know, figure things out and put the pieces together. And he's just kind of, it's funny in a way, it's almost like the world is happening to him. And he's not necessarily, you know, good at detectiving it. Is detectiving a word?
Yeah,
with an ing?
We'll go with it. I mean, it's an episode about Under Silver Lake, so we can make up whatever. So,
anything goes. Anything goes in this world. But yeah, and you know, it's got a lot of that whole stoner energy to it as well. So
yeah, I definitely picked up on that. I think as well, it's kind of a lot of it is this surreal sort of element to it, and like strange dream sequences as well. So you definitely, that's a really good one. I'm I'm annoyed that I didn't think of that one.
Well, that was my the first one that came to my mind when I was watching it. I mean, Big Lebowski is such a favorite of mine, and you know, the movies that are like it. I mean, we actually did a Breaking It Apart episode on the Big Lebowski, which is our side series where we go backwards and look at movies that we're inspired by. If this had been out yet at that time, I would have definitely cited this movie. And there's not a lot of movies that do it well. And that's why when something like this comes out, I really want it to be good. And I'm really glad that, you know, it seems like this is a very love it or hate it movie. And, I'm glad to fall on the love it side. I'm glad it's, you know, a movie that does it well and interesting. So what do you got for your next puzzle piece?
Okay, so next puzzle piece is a cult classic from John Carpenter, and that's 1988, They Live. That's an interesting film. Have you seen it at all?
They Live is one of those movies, and I talk about this on the show a lot, one of those movies where I'm sure I saw it back in high school, and I mean, it's been so long, but I certainly know of it, and I know of its, like, you know, its themes and its place in, you know, pop culture.
Yeah, it's definitely, I feel like with the sort of strange conspiracy theories in Under the Silver Lake and secret societies and the homeless king, who I love, by the way. I was just like, that's my favorite character in this film is the homeless king.
And they're also
communicating in their own sort of hobo language. I get this, it kind of reminded me a lot of the world in They Live with Roddy Piper's sort of homeless guy just sort of drifting, and he sort of ends up in this like little community and happens to come across these sunglasses that when he puts them on reveal that the world is being controlled by an elite secret society of really sort of creepy people. I don't want to give away too much. But I got, like, watching Under the Silver Lake, and the more they sort of dived into this secret underground world and all these different type of people and, like, pulling the strings, or are they pulling the strings? And this is, although there isn't any sort of magic sunglasses that the character wears, I think he... if he was given a chance to put those on, I think he would definitely sort of jump at that chance. He's so keen to find a conspiracy, but I don't think there's necessarily a real conspiracy there. So I was just watching it, and I think that also kind of the humor as well. There's quite a lot of like very dark jokes in Under the Silver Lake.
Yeah, very dark comedy.
Yeah, some of it I think doesn't necessarily land quite well, and you feel very uncomfortable, but I guess that's the point.
I think so. And you know, and by the way, spoilers are cool here because we're expecting people to have watched it before listening to these. You know, I think to your point there with They Live, it, which is a great puzzle piece, and I hadn't thought of it. But to your point, you know, the songwriter scene is, I think, one of my favorite things I've seen this year in the movies. And him just like saying that he had written every single popular song that Andrew Garfield's character loves, and you know, just it was just so funny and so like it just kind of spoke to me in such a way, because you know, I'm a big music person myself, and you know, the idea that it really is all just hidden messages, and they really are just you think that you've got your favorite artist, but really they're just pulling the strings on you and telling you what you you know, what you're going to be listening to and what music's going to define you. And that's so They Live, you know, that's like such a perfect parallel to They Live with the hidden messages and all that stuff. it's so funny. It's just so crazy.
That scene, like, oh my gosh, you just, it just escalates. and then it's just like, he just gets on with the rest of his, like, sort of the rest of the film. And you're like, okay, we're not addressing that. All right, moving on.
That is one of the things that I love so much about this movie, is that as he's continuing to uncover things, they don't really matter to him, even though he's finding all these secret answers and secret things. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, he just cares about finding this girl. And I think that's so funny, because he's obsessed with these hidden messages and meanings and all that. But he doesn't really care about them when it comes down to it. It's all for the means of just finding this one thing, which I think is just such a brilliant way of looking at conspiracy theory minded people. Mm. And, you know, that it really comes down to just kind of proving their own already inherent biases that they already had in their minds, you know. Another scene, actually, before I get to my next puzzle piece, that I think adds to that same thing that I'm saying there, is the Nintendo Power moment, which was really huge nostalgia for me. I mean, I actually had some high scores in Nintendo Power when I was a kid. But the fact that he's searching for what could NPM mean, and he's searching on Google, and there's like hundreds of things that it could be. And oh, the thing that it is the Nintendo Power issue that he has sitting right there in his living room. It's so perfect, because that's the thing about conspiracy theories, is, I mean, they always work out in whatever it is that you already kind of had in mind. You know, that's like the funny hidden secret of conspiracy theories, is that they don't make sense, but they make sense to you, because, you know, that's exactly what they are. They're your mind playing tricks on you, basically.
Yeah, that so is funny. It's just like such a coarse sort of really convenient sort of thing. And I think that's why this film is quite divisive in that respect, because it's just like, frustrating as well. It's like, of course, yeah, it's obvious that, you know, it just happens to have this. So, but that's what I love about it.
exactly. It's like, it's totally in on that. And, and you know what, that's actually a good transition to my next puzzle piece then, which is, you know, people who listen to the show know that Adaptation from Charlie Kaufman, Spike Jonze, is my favorite movie. And I think that there's a little bit of a parallel to the Charlie Kaufman of the movie, who is slowly starting to write this version of the story that he really didn't want to be writing in the first place. And so the movie is kind of becoming the thing that he didn't want it to be. I think, you know, David Robert Mitchell, he's making this movie that is about conspiracies and conspiracy theories, while at the same time making fun of them. And it's exactly the thing that he is kind of indicting. And I think it's just really funny and beautiful that the way that you're able to pull off that and really just like it's such a fine line to draw where it's it is that thing, but it's also making fun of that thing and kind of pulling back how silly that thing can be. And and kind of as a little bit of a bonus puzzle piece to go along with this one, I was thinking, because that's more of a character based thing with Adaptation, a little bit more of maybe a straightforward version of this same puzzle piece would be Ben Stiller's Tropic Thunder, which also is an action movie that's making fun of action movies within its own confines. And I think it's just so funny the way that a director can pull that off and really be the thing that it's making fun of.
No, I agree. I love the Tropic Thunder type of thing, because it's also so meta. In that sense, it just you just can't really watch any of those type of films again without thinking of that. I feel like the same way with conspiracy films now. I'm just going to be thinking of Under the Silver Lake.
Yeah, next time you think of hidden messages in a movie, or like any movie that's got like multiple readings and all that kind of stuff, you're just gonna be like, Under the Silver Lake did it too, and they did it in really just drew it back on itself, you know?
And that's kind of what I like about this film, is that my take is like, there is no conspiracy at all. It's just all in his head and everything. Mm-hmm. But if you go onto like Reddit and you go onto like forums and stuff, people are really taking it like apart and analyzing it, until like some of the stuff is like, how are they jumping to that conclusion? It's just amazing. And I have so much respect for them. Like, you know, they really put the effort into it. Like, trying to work out what the parrot is saying, and I saw something about how certain objects on a table end up looking like the map of the United States of America. I was just like, really? Does it? It just looks like stuff on the table, maybe.
So. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful that's exactly what they're commenting on in the movie. And here we are just falling right into place and doing it. It's so funny. Yeah. Oh man. So what do you have for your next puzzle piece?
So again, I'm going back to Hitchcock, and mm-hmm. this one is Vertigo.
Okay.
And the reason that I sort of chose Vertigo is for a few reasons, a lot of different things, but a few of them are obviously the missing girl. And trying to track someone, and there's those lovely sort of scenes where Sam is following the girls who happen to I've forgotten her name already.
The Rilo Kelly.
Yes,
character.
Yeah. I feel bad that I've forgotten her name now. Sarah. Sarah.
Sarah. Yes, that's right.
Sorry. So he's following her friends driving through LA, and it's just the way it reminded me of, again, James Stewart following Madeline mm-hmm. in the streets of San Francisco, and those long sort of shots where they're just driving, and I got that sort of vibe from that. And I also think as well, in terms of like the score of the movie, feels very much like the music from Vertigo, and the camera work as well in certain scenes is a brilliant part at the start of the film, where I think is it like some sort of animal falls from a tree,
yeah
and the camera does that sort of vertical pull out,
and there's some really cool shots like that in the movie,
and it's like just that sort of way that the camera follows him and moves around, and it feels all very sort of like again, this sort of homage to Hitchcock. I think if Hitchcock was alive right now, he would be saying that this is his favorite film, because it's got all the things that he loves about it. It's got like voyeurism, it's got a beautiful blonde, it's got a guy sort of going crazy.
I'm assuming Hitchcock was probably a dog person too, so there's that.
Yeah, I think so, possibly. Yes, actually he was, because there's a lot of him in there's a cameo, I can't remember which one it is, I want to say it's Psycho, where you can see Hitchcock walking, he's got some dogs, and they do look very similar to the dogs that go missing Under the Silver Lake.
That is probably completely intentional.
It's just a coincidence. I'm probably going
to... There you go. Yeah, seriously. There I go, falling right back into this movie's trap. Well, that's a great puzzle piece, absolutely. And and I think also, like, to go back to the main thing of Andrew Garfield's character following them around in the car and everything, it's a testament to him as being a great actor, you know, that, you know, this guy is kind of, you know, kind of a shady character. And we've talked a little bit about, you know, how he's not really a good guy or anything like that. But following him around is really just a joy to watch, I think, because he's just so magnetic on screen. And it's really fun to watch him. I'd love to see him in more roles like more roles where he gets to be a person and not be, you know, like a Spider-Man or anything like that.
I know. I thought my favorite bit in the film is actually when he wakes up and he has the Spider-Man comics on his hand.
That's great.
And it's just stuck on there. And he's like trying to pull it off. I thought, oh, that is just brilliant. But it's, you know, there's a lot there to say because obviously the character is still stuck in this sort of acting like a child, really, like a teenager. He still lives like a slob and plays games. So it's not just the fact that it's a reference to Andrew Garfield's, you know, past days as, you know, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, but he's also, the character is sort of clinging onto his childhood, and he really should be learning to let go. And I mean, he's about to be kicked out of his apartment
and he doesn't seem to care at all. Not even one bit. Well, I'm gonna go with my next puzzle piece, and this one actually is another Coen Brothers movie. I brought up The Big Lebowski earlier, and this one is Burn After Reading. And this one may seem like a little bit of a stretch at first, but the reason why is because when it comes down to the very end of Burn After Reading, the point of it all was that there was no point to any of it. And I feel like in a lot of ways, that's kind of what's happening here with Under the Silver Lake. I mean, he learned things, but he didn't learn things. He didn't grow. He didn't even really successfully complete his mission. I mean, he did find her, but to no end. I mean, she's still going, you know, going away with her cult situation or whatever the hell it is. And you know, really, when it comes down to it, everything that he learned, it's like it's kind of going to just burn out, and his memory is just not going to really expose any of it. None of it really matters when it comes down to it. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I love nihilistic films that like kind of have that point of view, because it's just like just such a comedy to that, to the idea that you're following this whole journey and adventure, but really to no real conclusion. Nothing is gained by the end, and I think that's just so funny.
Yeah, I've kind of thinking in a sense he does grow as a character. He sort of has to address his whole sort of issue with his past relationship as well, and the scene where he's got the dog biscuits, he's, you know, still clinging on to the fact that she, you know, she had a dog, and he carries them around, and maybe he feels like he can reconnect to her. But whether he's going to use that as like a motivation to actually get a job, I don't know. It's really odd.
You're definitely more optimistic about it than I am. I don't think so, but it's very, very possible, because I mean, he does seem to at least acknowledge the kind of you know, the rut he's got himself stuck into, but he is also under the influence of whatever they drugged him with. So I mean, who knows if any of it's going to stick.
It's all just a dream. I don't think it's a dream.
So what do you got for your next puzzle piece?
Okay, so obviously I've spoken a lot about conspiracy theories, and the 1970s saw a lot of conspiracy films come out. I guess obviously with Watergate, I think it was just sort of a reflection of the time. So I've got three different films, but I'm going to list them off one by one. But sure. If I go with my first one, which is called from the 1974, it's called The Parallax View. I don't know if you've heard of this one.
I have not, no.
Okay, so it's a really weird film. I had to look up the plot of it on Wikipedia because it was just like really, really hard to sort of tell. It's one of these, it's like Under the Silver Lake. It's really weird, like stuff happens in it and you're just like, okay, this has just gone in a real strange place. I didn't think it was going to go. but it's stars Warren Beatty, and he's a political reporter who happens to witness a presidential candidate be assassinated. And he sort of looks into it, and there's this mysterious corporation called the Parallax Corporation, which may be involved. So again, we've got this secret society trying to cover something up, and a murder. See, there's a pattern here.
Yeah, sure.
So he begins to investigate, and others who sort of share his suspicions start to turn up dead. And I think that, you know, that happens here in Under the Silver Lake, is, you know, people who Sam sort of comes into contact with don't necessarily have a great end.
Right. For sure.
For sure, yeah. And then he, Warren Beatty's character sort of ends up uncovering a conspiracy which is bigger than he ever thought. And then really strange things happens, and there's brainwashing involved, and a really weird sort of sequence, which, yeah, just people should just go look it up, because it's kind of ends up like Clockwork Orange, where character is being forced to watch scenes and is being brainwashed and ends up like a being told to go assassinate someone. So there's a lot going on there.
Sounds pretty damn good.
It's one of these films which you either love it or you hate it, but
sure.
I don't know whether it's necessarily dated well.
Hmm.
But I was just watching, when I was watching Under the Silver Lake, I was just thinking of all these 70s conspiracy films, and I was trying to think of the most obscure reference that I could think of.
Sure. Nice. I like it. I like it. So you said you had two others that are kind of similar?
Yes. So the more sort of well-known one would be All the President's Men.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like uncovering conspiracy, but this one is a bit more straightforward and is an actual conspiracy because it's based on a true story. So it's based on Watergate and the whole thing with Nixon. So that one is, yes, that generally happens. So
sure.
And the next one is 3 Days of Condor, starring Robert Redford as a quiet CIA codebreaker who walks into his workplace one day and happens to find out all his co-workers have been murdered. So then he uncovers that there's a conspiracy within the CIA, who were higher-ups were involved in the murders, and then he sort of has a hitman coming after him and has to sort of convince a beautiful girl to help him. But again, there's like the conspiracy elements on there, and just the sort of mood of the film. It ends in sort of you could either read it as an optimistic ending, or you could read it as like a really sort of, oh my God, like that's, yeah, there's no winners, but.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just.
Right on.
There's just so many of those films from that era.
Yeah, no, I totally see the parallel between those kind of films. And, you know, just like as a total aside, this wasn't one of my puzzle pieces necessarily, but, you know, one of my favorite movies of the last few years, The Nice Guys, I think was inspired by a lot of those movies as well. And I was almost thinking about using that as a puzzle piece for Under the Silver Lake. But yeah, I mean, it's just got that same kind of just like a big unraveling conspiracy that they're pulling together. But of course, in Under the Silver Lake, nothing necessarily adds up when it comes down to it. But those are definitely the kind of movies, though, where, you know, those conspiracies are like just so full and rich, and just so many cool ideas being put together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, cool. I like those. Those are good. My next puzzle piece. So this one's a little weird, but it has to do, because I feel like this movie is very, very strangely almost contemporary. Mm-hmm. There's so many references to things that we, you know, that are very specifically now things, you know, the iPhones everybody has, you know, they're talking about Amazon.
And they have the drone. They,
yep, yeah. They got the drone. There's the LA cemetery screenings, which are very popular in Los Angeles. A lot of talk of various pop music, social media, all that kind of stuff. And so I just felt it was such a very now movie in a way that 10 years ago, I felt that Scott Pilgrim versus the World was.
Yeah.
And so it may be a little bit of a weird comparison, but I just felt like that youthful energy and just capturing the now for these young people, which, I mean, I'm not that old, I'm 38, but you know, but capturing that youthful energy, I think is something that made me think of Scott Pilgrim. And then another way, and it's something we've kind of touched on a few times through the episode, but you know, Andrew Garfield, Sam, you know, not a very good person, borderline misogynistic, I think. And it wasn't, nobody was talking about that back when Scott Pilgrim came out, but I think there's been a lot of think pieces about how Scott Pilgrim is a kind of misogynistic character in retrospect. And so, I mean, that kind of an archetype of a character who's just, you know, very, you know, women are just kind of sex objects to him and not really, you know, not really having really great relationships with women. I think it's another kind of heroic character, but who has those flaws, you know?
And I think as well, like, both Scott Pilgrim and Under the Silver Lake have so many sort of references to, like, growing up in the 80s and the 90s that I think
absolutely,
like, you know, our generation sort of get in terms of, like, you know, especially Scott Pilgrim is so full of game references and, you know, music references, but even Under the Silver Lake feels like a bit like one of those weird indie games.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you have to just walk around picking everything up and thinking, does this work? Is this going to help me? Is this a clue?
That's funny that you bring that up. I was almost going to use that as a puzzle piece at one point, so I'm glad you brought it up. But yeah, like those point-and-click adventure games where it's like, yeah, you don't really know, you know, what to click on, but there's clues everywhere, and there's things that can be combined. And I mean, look at like when he combines the map from the Nintendo Power with the map from the cereal box. I mean, that is like straight out of one of those... you know, Grim Fandango or one of those kind of games.
Yeah, there was a game, like, I played it and I was terrified of it. Amnesia or something like that. It's like a horror-based game where you're trapped in some sort of castle and you have to get your way out, but go around, pull out drawers and look for things and read bits of paper and, like, notes and stuff, and that's how you find your way out of this situation. And I feel like someone needs to make Under the Silver Lake as a game. I would play that so much.
That would be awesome. That would work so well. Yeah, I never played that particular one you just mentioned, but I used to play those games all the time. My favorite back, I mean, this is like way back in like the 90s, back on DOS, MS-DOS, but my favorite was, I think it was called the Dagger of Amun-Ra. You were this woman that is trapped in a museum after it closes. Mm-hmm. And there's like a killer in the museum, and it was great. And like, just the puzzles were just so good. But I love it. I love that we brought up graphic adventure games. Those are, I used to love those games so much.
I don't think we're going to get a better puzzle piece than that.
I know, right? I'm like, do I even say my last one here? I don't even know. It's too good. Well, I only have one more. Do you have any other puzzle pieces?
I have a couple more. Okay. I guess one of them is possibly too recent to its account, but mm-hmm. They have a lot of similarities, and this one is Burning, the South Korean film that came out last year.
I still haven't seen it, and it's like towards the top of my list. I know, everybody says it's so great. I need to watch that.
I won't give too much away, but I feel like almost like Burning is Under the Silver Lake's more serious, like, cousin, you know? Mm. They kind of have the same sort of thing with, like, a woman going missing, and the main character isn't particularly likable. You know, he could be read as sexist in a way. He sort of is maybe suspecting someone's a murderer and they might not be. And there's also like a sort of power dynamic going on, and cover up as well. And the ending, like, I don't want to give away the ending, but the ending is just like, so bleak. You just feel like once it's happened, you don't really know what to think. Like, everything you think about this character that you've sort of got to, you know, you're more on his side, you know, towards the end of the film, and then he does something, and you're just like, okay, well, I don't know now. but so I don't know whether I can really count that one, because it's quite recent. I don't think, obviously, Robert Mitchell's got around to seeing it. But I feel like another one, which is possibly one that he might have seen or at least knows about, would be 1984's Body Double, the Brian De Palma film. Which, again, is about a young man who happens to watch a woman. Again, this sort of idea of watching women and without them really knowing about it. And then this one's a little bit more X-rated, and she happens to be, I think, like an adult film star or something. She's like, he witnesses her murder, or does he? And again, there's this sort of conspiracy to cover it up, but it's very much like De Palma's work was very heavily influenced by Hitchcock, but he sort of took it to the next level. And I don't think very many of those films have aged well, especially like the 80s films. You sort of go back to watch them and you're just like, oh, these are not that great.
Yeah, 80s is a strange time for film. The big blockbusters can still be fun, but a lot of movies are just like, ugh, oh boy.
You feel like you have to go wash yourself after watching them. Yeah. De Palma is one of those directors, like, you either love him or you hate him, and I'm still trying to decide do I like him or not. So Body Double, yeah, definitely was a film that I just couldn't really get on board with.
Gotcha. But yeah, no, absolutely. Good comparison though there. And I think that works great as a puzzle piece anyway. And obviously plenty of people can't get on board with Under the Silver Lake. So, well, right on. I've got one last puzzle piece. Just a quick one. And that is Rian Johnson's Brick, which also took like the noir genre and gave it a very, very young perspective. This obviously a little bit older. I mean, you'd imagine these people are all out of high school at least, but maybe not far out. Maybe, early 20s. Andrew Garfield, I don't know how old he is, but he looks so young.
Never ages.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
He just gets a little more stubble. That's about it. But he just looks so young. And all the people that he's surrounded with in this movie all seem so young, too. It just has such a youthful energy. And I talked about that a little bit in the Scott Pilgrim puzzle piece. But yeah, it's just, there's such a youthful energy to the movie, and mixing that with noir is what, you know, made me think of Brick, which is such a great movie.
Yeah, I've just looked up the age of Andrew Garfield, and I was shocked. He's 35 years old.
Wow.
He does not look 35.
No, he does not at all.
What is his secret? Crazy. Maybe if we...
I don't know.
We have to, like, the secret is Under the Silver Lake. We have to just, like...
Yes.
Unravel
yeah,
it.
We got to piece this thing together. this is a big secret.
I actually haven't seen Brick. I'll just tell you that. I'm going to confess that now. I haven't seen Brick.
Oh, okay.
I know, like, Brick is one of these films that everybody talks about, especially on film Twitter, I feel. And I've been meaning to watch it for such a long time, so I will have to watch it now.
Absolutely, and I should watch some of those movies that you mentioned earlier that I maybe watched in high school, but I don't really remember that well. But I certainly know all of their places in film history because I do pay attention, even though I don't watch as much of the old movies as I should. So with that being said, why don't we go ahead and do our finished puzzle, and then we will get to any closing thoughts on Under the Silver Lake. So the finished puzzle includes Rear Window, The Big Lebowski, They Live, Adaptation, Tropic Thunder, Vertigo, Burn After Reading, The Parallax View, All the President's Men, 3 Days of the Condor, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, Burning, Body Double, Brick, and, you know, we didn't mention it, but we could mention Inherent Vice as well, along with Big Lebowski, because that's another one of this little theme, I think. It fits in really well. I was just thinking about, I should have brought that up, so now I'm bringing it up now.
Yeah, I just thought of Mulholland Drive as well.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that works too. It's very just, got a lot of those kind of vibes. Yeah.
Any film set in LA where someone goes missing.
Yes, absolutely. This is the kind of the ultimate. This is it. No, I totally, totally agree. And I'm going to actually add those to the list real quick, just for when I put it on the website.
You kind of think, have I got them?
But right on. So like, yeah. Do you have any other like closing thoughts about Under the Silver Lake and about the kind of mind trip of a mystery that this movie is?
I think it's one of these films that is going to gain a real cult following, and I think that people will go back, maybe not, in a few months' time, or it might take a bit longer, it might be 2 years, it might even be 5 years, but I feel like people will go back and they'll appreciate it, and it will become more of a classic. I feel like there's a lot about it that is very relevant to what is happening in society now, especially in terms of like masculinity and toxic masculinity and the male gaze. And I feel like we almost have to overcome all that in order for us to go back and look at it again. I feel like this is a film that is almost ahead of its time in that respect.
I agree. Absolutely. I think that this is definitely a movie that, and I think it knows that it is dealing with the male gaze in a very heavy way. And I think it leans into it to kind of make a point about it. But I'm not 100% sure, because it's so hard to tell, because they're really playing with the idea of art meaning things, you know? And so it really just makes it so difficult to know for sure what the director's, what his intention was. But I absolutely agree, though, with the things that you're saying there. And, one quote from the movie that I wrote down that I just think it really just kind of encapsulates a lot of this movie is, we crave mystery because there's none left. And I think that that's just such a great little line of dialogue. And it really like kind of sums up the movie in a lot of way, how not just the characters are looking for mystery within, you know, their world, but we're looking for mystery within the movie. We want there to be mystery. And it's like, did he ingrain this with all the mystery that we think he did, or are we just kind of finding it because we want it? And I think that's just such a great little commentary.
And I think as well is the simple fact that it doesn't have a straightforward ending, and nothing really gets tied up, is really what life is about. Like in life, there isn't any real answers to some of the questions that we ask. And you know, we can either sort of go with it and just get on with our lives, or we can let it consume us and just become obsessed like Sam does.
That sounds like a good movie to me. Well, you know, one last thing, and this is my little fan theory I wanted to share with you, that I've been thinking about all morning. Okay. And this is, of course, plays right into what I was just saying about how they want us to, you know, search for mystery and everything. I have bitched so much on Twitter about A24 not giving this the proper theatrical release that it was supposed to get. So my little fan theory is that what if they did that as part of the mystery to play into our own little theories that we could start formulating and whatnot. think I'm crazy, or am I on some...
I think it was like a deliberate marketing campaign of not doing a marketing campaign.
Right? I mean, it's crazy, but I mean, it's possible.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think as well, it's one of those films which is really hard to sell to just like a average film goer.
Yes.
Like, hey, come watch this conspiracy film, which is may or may not be a conspiracy film, and there's a dog killer who may or may not be a dog killer. Yeah, it's not, everyone loves dogs, no one wants to see dogs going missing in their films.
And an owl killer who may or may not be an owl killer. There's all kinds of killers that may or may not be there's no telling with this movie.
I really want to go watch it again. And I feel like I could write about it. Like, if you told me, like, you can only write about one film for the rest of your life, I think I will have enough content from Under the Silver Lake.
Just keep going and keep going and keep unraveling.
I will find out what it means.
Well, thank you so much, B, for being here. As we usually do at the end of the episode, do you have anything you've watched recently that you'd like to recommend?
Under the Silver Lake. I think I watched a really great film recently, which I just kind of want to get more people to go and see it. It's I don't know whether it's out in the US at the moment, but it's definitely out in the UK, and that's a film called Wild Rose, which is a lovely little film about a woman from Glasgow who wants to become a country singer. And there isn't really a country music scene in the UK at all. But she's trying to get enough money saved up so she can go to Nashville in the US. But she's also sort of just come out of prison and is trying to reunite with her mom and her two children. So it's a lovely sort of film, a bit... with some great music and great performance from an actress called Jessie Buckley, I believe her name is. She is amazing in this, and she does all her own singing, and you just get goosebumps. It's, you know, just a really great film. So
awesome.
I don't even like musicals, and this one was just perfect for me. I was just like, started tapping along to the music, and I was like, I like country now.
Yeah, I've been slowly letting country get to me lately, so I'm definitely looking forward to checking it. I've heard good things about the movie, so right on. And then, you know, of course, if you'd like to plug your website and all that.
Yes, you can find us, find me at Filmotomy. That's Filmotomy. And like I say, we do loads of great content, looking at a whole range of different films, you know, and our own podcasts, which we've just recently done one on Lars von Trier. You thought Under the Silver Lake was controversial. Try watching a Lars von Trier film.
Right on. Well, I thank you again so much for being here, and I'm looking forward to having you back. We're going to be talking about High Life coming up for the VOD release, so thanks again for being here, and looking forward to doing it again.
No problem at all. Thanks.
If you like podcasts and you like science, come on, baby, listen to us.
Oh, my God.
Is that good?
Yeah, that was epic.
Listen to the Mad Scientist podcast on all of your iTunes and other listening things. I'm your host, Chris Cogswell, here with my co-host, Marie Mayhew.
And we sing. We sing. We sing a lot. We sing for science. Yes.
We talk about science. We talk about history. We talk about ghosts and monsters and UFOs and things. And it's a lot of fun. So come learn about ghosts and UFOs and physics and chemistry and a little bit of biology.
And about economic collapse.
On the Mad Scientist Podcast.
Those guys get really, really excited about their podcast. And you know what? That's pretty cool. I'm glad they do. I need to get more excited about piecing it together. Yeah. Well, I was really excited about that episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Under the Silver Lake is a movie that is out now on VOD and definitely worth checking out. I really wish I'd gotten to see it in the theater, but hey, you know what? It is what it is. More and more movies are going to come out that I'm not going to get to see in the theater. This shouldn't have been one of them, but it is. And so it is what it is. Thank you to Bea Garner for joining me on this one. I had a great time talking to her, and she's going to be back again really soon for an episode on High Life. And also, I want to mention, over there at Filmotomy, they have a thing going on called Festival Cinephilia. It's a fundraiser for cancer, and you can find out more info about that. I'll have a link in the show notes, or you could just go check out Filmotomy on Twitter and get more info there. So that's something worth checking out. And I guess that does it for today. I want to remind you all, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. And you can also rate and review us on iTunes, which would be amazing, especially if you gave us 5 stars. That would be even better. You can also join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where the conversation about all these movies continues. And what else can you do? You can go to our website, piecingpod.com, and sign up for the mailing list. That would be pretty cool. I got some more giveaways and contests that I'm planning on doing real soon. So I think you should do that. I think that's about it for today. Why don't we finish this thing up? We got plenty more Piecing It Together coming your way. So let's finish it up with a song. And I think, you know what? This is a movie about looking for clues and things like that. Why don't we finish it up with a song called Under the Dust, which I don't really know what I was thinking of when I named it that, but I mean, Under the Dust is certainly a place you would search for clues, right? So, hey, that kind of fits. So this is Under the Dust from my 3rd album, Head Like Fire.
and all points west.